I was writing about overcoming the ego, and I was literally living that myself, trying to overcome my ego and dealing with the, you know, the job in advertising, and then going to Kundalini, and then seeing the other side of that, where it can dissolve and you can let it go and you find that peace beyond the ego. So looking back, I really needed that balance of hyper ego and then open channel of intuition, just to kind of understand both sides of that.
Welcome to the Body Forward Podcast. I'm Kenzie Burke, your host. I am devoted to living a life that is full of transformation, like a snake, shedding layers, coming back home to myself and remembering who I really am. I have found that the answers we are often looking for, the freedom we seek to feel, the creative energy we desire, the confidence we would like to embody, is not something outside of us, but within us. Our bodies are full of wisdom, remembrance, liberation, and it is here on this podcast where I share my personal journey and conversations with my mentors, friends, and others who are aspirational in living a life full of transformation. On this episode, I sit down with James McRae, who is an author, creative, and a beautiful soul. We speak about so many amazing topics, and the root of all of them is creativity and unlocking your own creativity in yourself. And yeah, I'm not going to say much more. I'll let you jump right in. Okay, well, are you good to flow?
I'm good whenever you're good.
Cool. I don't script it. We just...
I love it. I love the confidence.
Yeah. So with that being said, would you introduce yourself?
Yes.
In whatever way you feel called to.
James McRae.
Okay.
Also known as Words Are Vibrations.
On Insta.
On Insta. Also known as the author of The Art of You, the essential guidebook for reclaiming your creativity, which came out, I guess, like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Is this your first book?
This is my third book.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were the other ones?
My first book came out in 2017, and it's called Shit Your Ego Says. It's kind of like a autobiographical mindfulness book. And my second book came out in 2021, and it is a collection of poetry and memes. And it's called How to Laugh in Ironic Amusement During Your Existential Crisis.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I like the awkwardness of having an excessively long book title.
Yeah. Also, I found you through your memes.
Yeah. Well, so many people did, actually. Like, my, even though I had a book out and all this stuff, when I started making memes in 2020, like during the pandemic, it was like a way for me to cope with the absurdity of the world.
And they were so spot on.
And so I'm like, I'm going to apply my, I've always been a writer. But it was the first time I'm like, okay, I've written poetry, I've written books, I've written all these different types of things, philosophical, spiritual thinking. But I'm like, I'm going to apply all of this to memes. And like, and that, that's when my Instagram blew up. And so most people were introduced to me through my memes.
Yeah. Yeah. They were going viral.
Yeah.
So what was your path to being an author?
Mm-hmm. Well, writing was just the first thing I always wanted to do. Like writing, just actually just art in general, anything creative. I was kind of always my whole life balancing between writing and visual arts. So I've been writing poetry since I was 14 years old. Always wanted to write books. You know, I did painting for a long time, and when it was time to go to college, I just like didn't want to, because I just wanted to be an artist. And I went to a university, and after a semester, I just felt like my soul was being crushed. So I dropped out and just became like a starving artist, and just really moved around the country and worked odd jobs and like painted and wrote poetry and just explored my own creativity. And that was great. And I'm glad I gave myself that freedom to do that at that age. But ultimately, I got really depressed during that period of my life because I didn't have any direction. I didn't have purpose. I was being creative, but like no one was seeing my work. I wasn't sharing it. I didn't have community. I didn't have mentors or guides. And all my friends were like in college. So I was just very like isolated. So I decided I need to find a way to be creative, but apply it with some direction. So I went to an art school for graphic design, and I learned graphic design and ended up getting into the advertising industry through that, and had a whole career in advertising, first as a graphic designer. I got bored with that after a few years, and I switched over to being a brand strategist. Because in brand strategy, there's kind of more ideation. You're more like upstream of the just of the creative process. So I was like doing brand messaging and naming companies and doing marketing campaigns and positioning strategy and all this like more high level thinking. And that was really, it was really fun for a while. And I'm glad I had a creative career and a creative profession, but I still felt like my soul was being suffocated a little bit. And, you know, I got really lucky with my first book deal. Like, cause I grew up in a very small town.
In where?
In Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wisconsin.
Midwest.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yep.
Neighboring states. So, you know, the deal, but,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I lived in Minneapolis, and then I always wanted to move to New York City. Like, I always felt drawn to New York City. Just because when I was a kid, I would read about all these writers and poets and artists, and they were always in New York City. So I just always felt a call to move to New York City. And in my late 20s, I finally did. I just quit my job. I moved to New York City. And I arrived in New York City, and within the first month of me living there, Hurricane Sandy hit New York. It was the largest storm in the city's history. And the apartment that I had just started to rent was destroyed. So this is all leading up to how I got my first book deal.
Okay.
I was already like struggling to make it in New York, and no one would hire me. And I was like running out of money. And then suddenly I'm homeless after the hurricane destroyed my apartment. So I really didn't know what to do. And I had a friend who was also became homeless in the hurricane. And he had a friend in this little island in the Caribbean called Culebra, who had this empty beach house. And like not even a house, like a little cottage. And he's like, well, let's just go stay there for a while and figure things out. So like we spent the last of our money and got like a one-way ticket to this little island in the Caribbean, and it was like mostly uninhabited. And I would just sit there on the beach and watch the tide go in and out. And it was like a prolonged state of meditation. Mm-hmm. And I felt really, all my fears and insecurities were coming to the surface. I felt like a failure. I felt like moving to New York was a mistake. And I had failed in doing so. And now I was homeless on an island without any money or a job. And the longer I sat there and just like watched the tide and just was alone with my thoughts, I started to recognize that these thoughts were just, it was just my ego talking. And it was the first time in my life where I really recognized that, oh, everything that I think isn't necessarily true. And there's this like ego chatter that we all have. And the longer I just sat with that, I could start to tune into a quieter voice, which was the voice of my intuition. Mm-hmm. And I realized that we all have at all times the voice of our ego and the voice of our intuition, and they're always talking to us, and it's really up to us which one we listen to. You know, the ego is very loud, and defensive and often afraid. And the intuition is more quiet and it whispers, and it's more of a feeling than it is even a thought. So anyway, it was in that that moment that I suddenly had this idea for a book that was called Shit Your Ego Says. And I just knew that it was going to be published. I just felt like, okay, this is the one that I'm going to write.
Your intuition told you.
My intuition told me. And through a series of incredibly fortunate events, that book ended up being published by Hay House.
Wow. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
So lucky. So I started to write the book, and I wrote like half of it. And at this time I have no audience. I'm not a public figure. I don't have any social media profiles that people are following. No one knows who I am. And I put together a book proposal, and I sent it out to every single email in the publishing industry that I could find, agents, editors, everyone. And no one even got back to me. Like, they didn't even bother to reject me. It was just like silence.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is not what I had hoped for. And then I had a friend who like was working with someone else on pitching this book to Hay House in the UK. So he had this contact there, and without even telling me, he had my proposal. He didn't even tell me. He just sends it to Hay House in the UK, and they loved it. They sent it to the New York Hay House, and they loved it. And then before you know it, I don't even know what's going on. I get an email from Hay House inviting me into their office for a meeting. And I'm like, what? Like, how did this happen? But even then, they told me, I went in there the next day. I met with their like vice president. And she's like, this is one of the best proposals I've ever seen. But you don't have an audience. She's like, if you had an audience, we'd publish this tomorrow. So she gave me some tips on how to grow my audience on social media. And
is that really what it takes? You have to have an audience now to get a book deal?
Well, it helps, because, you know, I don't know how it used to be, but authors are very much expected to promote their own book.
Yeah.
And to kind of have an audience who's ready for it. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily need a big audience, like hundreds of thousands of followers, but you do need to have credibility in a topic or an industry. You need to be like a proven thought leader. So having an audience is one way to kind of prove that you're a thought leader and people care about what you have to say. But there are other people who have a smaller audience, but it's a dedicated audience. Yeah. And they're really known for being an expert in like this one thing. So there are a lot of different rationales on why people would get published, but having an audience is certainly one of the factors. Yeah. But I was so lucky because I didn't have an audience. And then what happened next was, she emails me again the next day, this woman from Hay House. And she's like, so we have this conference coming up in Chicago, and it's for aspiring authors. And someone who goes to this conference is going to be awarded a book deal. And it's like $8,000 to attend, but we're going to send you for free.
Oh my gosh.
So like, they just like set me up, and I went to the conference and I won the contest.
How did you win? What did you have to do?
You basically just submit the proposal.
They wanted so much that they were like, let's just get this guy in the back door.
They snuck me in.
Yeah.
They snuck me in.
Hey, that's amazing.
So everyone has a different publishing journey. Like, you know, and that's just what mine is. It was very untraditional, but I always say the universe works in mysterious ways. So the universe found a way to open the doors for me to do that. And I'm very grateful that it turned out that way, even though it was a little bit rocky getting there, you know, just dealing with the hurricane and the homelessness and not having an audience. But
if you didn't have that time of solitude, you wouldn't have had that book drop in.
100%.
And when that book came in, what were you doing with yourself, your soul, your practices, when you became aware of your ego?
It's a good question because, you know, it was really my breakthrough into mindfulness and into meditation and even into spirituality in a way. And I ended up back in New York City and I ended up like getting an apartment and getting it and finding my job in advertising and like stabilizing my life in New York. And, you know, coming from Minnesota, especially in a small town, New York was it's a big culture shock to live there, to move there and to work there in advertising on Madison Avenue.
Yeah, it's very so different.
Very fast paced, very demanding, hyper productive. And it turns out I needed to seek out something that was equally nurturing to balance out all of the chaos around me. So I discovered, for me at that time, I discovered Kundalini yoga.
You know that's my thing.
I do. That was a big...
Kundalini has just changed my life.
That was a big breakthrough. So it was just like, I think it was probably a couple months after I got back from Culebra that I just found myself in a Kundalini studio in Manhattan. And at the time, I had maybe done a couple yoga classes, like in a gym. Like I wasn't familiar with yoga at all. I wasn't a yogi. I wasn't a spiritual person. I wasn't a meditator. And then suddenly I found myself in a Kundalini yoga studio where everyone's wearing white.
Yeah.
The teacher has a turban and everyone's chanting. And I'm like,
the chanting is, yeah.
But it was also new to me that I'm just like, what is going on? I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I was intrigued, but I was also like, I felt like a fish out of water.
Kundalini calls.
Yeah.
It calls and it tells you that it wants you there.
Yeah.
Because you keep coming back for more.
Yeah.
Because you could also feel the shifts, like after you finish chanting or finish breathing or finish the movements, something has changed in you.
Totally. And I remember when I went to that first class, for some reason I felt, I'm like, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to come back here. So I'm just going to sign up for a 10 class pack. Cause I just wanted to make sure that I made myself come back. So then I just went back again and I went back again. And it was after class, like I would just leave and it was like, my channel was just wide open.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, and I was starting to write the book at this time. So after class, I would just have all these ideas. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go home and write about this. So it wasn't, I saw the benefits of it immediately.
Well, it opens up your creativity.
Right.
When I start, it got me out of freeze state.
Yeah.
It reminded me of my passion, my power, my desire. It awakens our creative center.
Yeah.
That's literally what Kundalini is. It awakens our center of creativity.
Yeah, and it's stimulating so many ways, right? Because you've got the physical movement, you've got the meditation, you've got the chanting, you've got the community.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like whenever there's people who are into Kundalini, it's like a secret club.
Yeah.
So it
And it's all like people who know.
Yeah. So it was my gateway drug into the quote unquote spiritual community. And it was just, it was so vital at that time just to find that inner stability to balance out the chaos that was all around me in New York. And I ended up a couple of years later getting my teacher certification. And that was like one of my first really, really big like initiations is like going through Kundalini teacher training and we're showing up at 5 a.m. to chant for 3 hours and all this crazy stuff. And it's not a big part of my life these days. I would like to do more of it, but I'm so grateful for the practices I needed them so much at that time and mm-hmm. they just came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you wrote your book during this time.
Yeah. Yeah. My first one. Yeah.
And were you changing and shifting a lot through writing it? Because if you're writing about that, you're not your ego, right? Or maybe not your ego, but like not to listen to your ego.
Yeah. It's so interesting because at that time, I was doing Kundalini, which was super not in the ego. That's where it's like you're cultivating that channel of intuition. But I was also working full time at this crazy, you know, ad firm where there was ego everywhere. And, you know, people are trying to get promoted and they're do all this office politics and you're dealing with crazy clients and there's all these meetings and disagreements and a lot of ego, a lot of people trying to be the, you know, just like the loudest person in the room to sound the smartest and all this stuff. So I was getting both sides of it. So I've looking back now, I kind of needed those experiences to write that book because I was writing about the ego and dealing with my own ego. So I needed to be, if I was all just in that Kundalini world, I wouldn't have been in touch with my ego enough to really write about it in the depths that I wanted to and how to overcome it. So it was, I was writing about overcoming the ego and I was literally living that myself, trying to overcome my ego and dealing with the job in advertising and then going to Kundalini and then seeing the other side of that where it can dissolve and you can let it go and you find that peace beyond the ego. So looking back, I really needed that balance of hyper ego and then open channel of intuition just to kind of understand both sides of that.
Yeah.
And give tips on how to other people can move past that in their own lives.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best way to deliver something is to live it, yeah. To walk the walk, to breathe it.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah.
Lived experience, lived earned wisdom.
Yeah.
Especially as a writer, you can't, there's no substitute for lived experience and earned wisdom. You know, you can read all the books in the world. You can listen to all the podcasts in the world. You know, you can think about things, but really getting let that life experience and that's how you can embody the wisdom that you learn along the way.
Yeah, I think for any creator, mm-hmm. you have to turn your pain into your power, yes. Tune in, close your eyes, and deliver from your heart.
Yeah, that's transmutation. Yeah. That's what I call that creative alchemy, yeah. Actually, is when you, because like life happens and we all go through life and we experience traumas, either major or minor, you know, we experience negative emotions. And then, you know, where does that go? Because I feel like that goes into your body.
It does. And it stays.
And you absorb it. And there are all sorts of, you know, somatic practices where you can release it, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is, breath work or
shaking
feeling, even Kundalini. Even yoga, yeah. Right? But what I like to say is that I think creativity is a healing modality.
I couldn't agree more with you.
And a wellness practice.
Yeah.
Because I think what you're doing is you're excavating your inner world and you're doing this kind of self-discovery of where there might be some stuck emotions, where do you feel darkness, where do you feel pain, and you're going into it. And what you're doing is you're pulling it out of yourself through that expression. So even if I like to say that it's creativity is like a purge. You know, you're going within yourself and you're finding where there's like toxins or negative emotions or stuck energy and you're releasing it. So when you open your notebook and you're doing your writing, you're purging your subconscious or you're purging your emotions onto the page. And then I especially love sharing creative expression in public as in a community, because there's something that's even more cathartic when you can actually verbalize it and release it in front of others and have it be received. So I have come to realize that for me, creativity is it's a healing modality. And it's also, I consider it to be my personal spiritual path. I think it is, you know, some people are into religions and some people are into yoga or just wellness in general or mindfulness. And for me, creativity has always been that outlet for me to connect with myself and to connect with source and to connect with the divine. It's there's a certain alchemy that takes place And I think the intuition in a lot of ways is a portal to, you could call it source consciousness. You know, you could call it divine consciousness. And we're connecting with that and we're letting it move through us. So for me, you know.
And it's giving it a purpose.
Yeah.
I think also as humans, we want purpose so much. And I found in my life when I'm not creating, I'm not happy.
Oh, yeah.
And it took me a little while to really realize that's what it was. But it's like there's this whole internal world happening.
Yeah.
And if I am not expressing it or giving it a divine channel to somewhere to go, then it's in me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also fun.
Yeah.
You know, like I think one thing that creativity does, it connects us with our inner child.
Yes.
The inner artist.
And it's helpful, right? Because if we're feeling something like this inside, you know, how many other people are also feeling that? Yeah. So then it's uplifting this collective energy at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, it's fun. You know, there's different, you know, spirituality doesn't have to be so serious. You know, there's a time for seriousness, or there's a time to really, you know, honor the sacred with a certain, you know, seriousness for sure. But life should be fun. And I think spirituality should be fun. You know, I love like the certain religions throughout history that have had an ecstatic, almost rapturous nature to them. So I think of like Sufism. Like some of my favorite poets were Sufis, like Hafez and Rumi. These were people that were like from Persia, I don't know, 500 some years ago, and they were Sufis. And Sufi was like a mystical offshoot of Islam. And one thing they'd do would they would like spin around in circles while singing songs. A lot of people don't realize because we read Rumi and we read Hafez and they're beautiful poems to read. But in a lot of cases, those were songs that people would sing. Those were like the pop songs of the day. People would go around spinning in circles, singing Hafez. And that was part of a Sufi ritual. So, you know, there's something about in modern culture, like going to a concert. Or going to a rave, you know, like we do these things often unconsciously with alcohol and drugs and whatnot. But there's a human need to participate in that kind of ecstatic experience.
Yeah.
So creativity is a way to connect with that. We're all looking for that.
I even think of my high school days. I used to go to raves and stuff. And
in Wisconsin?
We would drive to, do you remember Bass Nectar?
No. Oh, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. We would drive to Minneapolis or Chicago.
Cool.
Yeah. But it was like this feeling that I had never experienced before. And now that I'm really into my own dance and my Kundalini and my movement and my music, I experience that every single day. But yes, yes.
Yeah.
And my wish for the world really is that people start to experience these feelings without, you know, the drugs or feeling like, you know, you got to drive to Minneapolis to go see Bass Nectar.
Totally. Although drive to Minneapolis because it's a great city. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. I mean, there's a place for substances and there's nothing wrong with substances. They can be fun, but really there's always you have to pay it back the next day.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So ideally you want to be able to reach that point of fun and ecstasy without drugs.
Well, the cool thing, my point is it's always available to us in our bodies.
Totally.
And in the singing and the dancing. Totally. And that's my message. It's there. We don't have to seek it in something else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's organic. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. And I think joy is our birthright. I think happiness is our birthright. And there's just so many ways that we've been cut off from that.
And why do you think that? I mean, I agree with you, but why do you think we've been cut off from it? I just like to hear.
Yeah, there's so many reasons, I'm sure. I think, I don't like to just throw a big blame on society. It's so easy. Well, society does this. But like we have been conditioned in a lot of ways to really to listen to that judgmental ego that we have, rather than that just like inner child, innate intuition, creative spirit that we all have. You know, I think that we're trained at a young age to, well, the schools, first of all, are designed to create factory workers. Like that's like literally like the formula of modern education was established to create these like obedient factory workers. And even, you know, I grew up a Christian. I imagine you did too in Wisconsin. I don't know. It seems to be
no, like... but at times I wish I did.
Yeah.
Because well, I wanted something.
You wanted something, sure. Yeah. But even that, you know, and I'm not trying to disparage Christianity. You know, there's pros and cons like with any religion. And but in so many ways, it's the fun has been sucked out of that religious experience.
Absolutely.
Where it's about, the Bible talks about like the fear of having a fear of God. And I think like I get what that kind of is supposed to mean. It's more like a respect of God. But I think so many like religious scriptures get misinterpreted over the thousands of years that they've been around.
I agree. And I also think and feel that they all kind of say the same thing at their very core before all of the years and the projections and what people made of them. Yeah. From spirituality to any scripture, any ancient, it all is kind of saying the same thing. Yeah. It's just what we've made out of it. And I think from a society way, you know, it's very like labeled. If you're a Christian, you're this and you're good and you're bad and you're, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the essence of all religions is pure and true. Mm-hmm. I think that my perception is that all religions begin as a sort of poetry.
Yes.
You know, a sort of mythology. I think all religions are right metaphorically. Metaphorically speaking, they're great constructs to help us understand the nature of reality. The problem is when we start taking them too literally and we get fixated on the characters in the mythology and we create idols out of them.
And look where we are now in society too.
Yeah. And then you're worshiping these idols and there's certain rules that things you can do and can't do. And then it just becomes not what it was meant to be. So I think that we've just... misinterpreted. And I think this is across society where we take things too literally. I even look at the modern political discourse.
Yeah.
And the media landscape, right? Like, ugh. Like
too literally.
Too literally. I think that everyone's like stuck in this like game of like argumentative absolutes because they just believe so deeply in one side of a story.
Yeah. And it's like, where are we going?
Yeah.
Let's zoom out. Where are we going?
Zoom out, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's not about, like, one side being right and one side being wrong. And, like, because that's a...
There's a lot of distraction.
You can only win that game by, like, destroying the other side, which is not what we want. It's about loosening our tight grip on this, like, linear, logical point of view that we have and, like, softening our language and softening our thinking and introducing... poetry and myth to the public discourse. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just having more room to understand each other and have compassion for each other. And just, I think for me as a poet and, you know, words are the tools of my trade. So I see there are other solutions, but from where I'm sitting in my role in the world, I think we could do so much good by through words, through language, by introducing more. It's like what I try to do is like, especially on social media, right? Because social media can be such a toxic place and everyone's so opinionated and everyone's so...
People can be mean.
People are very mean. So I like to equate it to like, it's like we're at a dinner table together and everyone's bickering. So I try to be like, how do you raise the tone of the conversation above the level of bickering? And how do you find that harmony that transcends the bickering? So that's the voice that I try to have on social media. And I just think, and I'm not the only one, there are so many other great writers on social media that are doing it. But I think that's one way you can heal the world is by healing our language and engaging with more intentional, compassionate language. I think that can go a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just compassion. Yeah. That's the other thing. I think a lot of what we're all missing.
Yes.
Is compassion.
Yes, that
deep
is
compassion core. For ourselves, our inner child, our parents, our neighbors, the person that was mean to us in social media, just deep compassion.
I couldn't agree more. I think compassion is like the heart of most, if not all, religions, and that's something that's been lost. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes so far to when we feel seen and heard by others, we relax. Mm-hmm. So when we can all just like see and hear each other and see where we're coming from and understand that we all have trauma, we all have a background that people don't know about. Everyone's got a story, mm-hmm. you know, and holding space for each other to, you know, get through whatever we had to go through and to be there for each other.
Yeah.
And yeah. Find like this, refine this idea of community.
Yeah.
You know, and that starts with our own lives. You know, so many people want to fix the world, you know, fix the world out there. But I think it starts just in your immediate surroundings.
It starts with you.
It starts with you, mm-hmm. your relationship with yourself mm-hmm. and your friends and your family and who you interact with every day. I think it starts there. That's why people are so angry on social media. They're trying to like fix these big picture problems and they think that anger is a way to do that. But really it's about
making it worse.
It's making it worse. It's about, no, just like, I'm a big believer in just tending to your own garden, whether that's your own, take care of your own self, get your self-care game in order. And then extend that to your family, your friends, your loved ones, make an impact in your own community and let that ripple out little by little out into the world.
And it does. It inspires other people too.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
An embodied person really changes the world.
Sure.
Changes the community, changes the collective.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we all interact with people throughout the day and like a little interaction can go a long way too. And when you see someone and they're truly kind and they're truly sweet and genuine, it's like, oh, I want to be a little more like that.
Yeah, I felt that way when I moved here from LA. I felt such a softening.
Interesting.
Yeah, because people were so much nicer here.
Yeah.
Even at restaurants and just being out, you know, I would double check. Are you being that nice to me?
I agree, because I was in New York and then LA. Although it was mostly in LA during the lockdown period. So
you were in Topanga, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we were neighbors.
You were in Topanga too.
I was in Malibu during, well, I actually traveled for half the lockdown and then the other half I was in Malibu.
So we were neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at that little Topanga beach, like right when it goes into Malibu.
Yeah.
I was there all the time.
Oh
you,
my gosh.
You were probably there at yeah. some point.
That's amazing.
But I felt the same way. I felt like, okay, people in New York and LA, they're always so, it just feels very competitive. It feels like everyone's got an agenda. And it's like,
everyone wants something.
Like what
for
is
themselves.
That? Yeah. Like who, like, oh, what's your job title? Like,
how many followers do you have?
Yeah. Like, we're like, what are you wearing? Like judging someone's like outfits or something. It just felt like it was just jockeying to get ahead. And as soon as I came here, it's like everyone just seemed chill. Everyone just seemed like normal. And yeah. Like everyone didn't really care about all that superficial stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's some of that. you know, there's probably little aspects of even the spiritual community, quote unquote, that there's some like hierarchy.
There's definitely that, but it's nothing compared to.
No.
It's just a different quality of life.
Right. You can relax a little bit more.
Yeah.
Are you more relaxed since moving
oh,
here?
Oh my gosh. My nervous system totally changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got so deeply in touch with myself when I moved here. I started like cultivating a deep sense of self-love, processing trauma with so much compassion. And my heart has completely softened since I got here, just completely. And community, mm-hmm. that's a big thing too. I mean, I have a stronger community here in 9 months than I did in 10 years in LA. So
that's, is that, says something. How much of that is due to Sukha yoga? Shout out Aaron and Mark.
Shout out Aaron and Mark. A lot of it. But, you know, I think people here are just something that's so important to me is creativity.
Yeah.
So people that are here, to me, feel genuinely creative.
Yeah.
Whereas in LA, it felt not genuine. It felt transactional.
You know what? Like, I have a whole little section in my book about Austin as a creative hub, because there's a
new book,
mm-hmm. okay. The Art of You. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to hear about this book too.
There's a whole history of Austin being like a hotspot for creativity, and in particularly a place where the throat chakra opens.
Someone told me this right before I moved here.
Interesting. I had a whole opening of the throat chakra after moving here where like, it was mostly because I was having to do more podcasts and like put myself out there as a public figure and host events. All that was new to me. You know, I'm pretty introverted by nature. So I really had to learn to be comfortable doing that. And Austin was very helpful. But even like, here's one little story that just like kind of mirrors what you experienced moving here. It's like the country singer Willie Nelson. He's like Austin's biggest legend. Like there's a Willie Nelson statue. There's Willie Nelson murals everywhere. Like Willie Nelson is as beloved in this city as anyone else is in any other city. And Willie Nelson spent like decades in Nashville in the, I don't know, 50s and 60s as like a writer of country songs. And he was like clean cut, wore suits, really this eager, clean cut, like songwriter. And the Nashville country scene was very polished and very, it was almost like a factory. It was almost like what, like the pop star factory of today. It was almost like that was what Nashville was to the country scene at that time. In other words, it was very formulaic. And he struggled to break through as an artist. So after years and years and years of not being able to find his way in Nashville, he decided just to leave, and he moved to Austin, and he grew a beard. He started wearing bandanas around his head, and he started smoking like crazy cannabis, and he started to play these little honky tonks around town and he would just play around and he would be kind of like, he would mix jazz and pop and rock and country and just be himself and do his own style. And it was like nothing like Nashville. And they actually, they called it outlaw country because he was just doing his own thing and he looked like an outlaw. That was very new and shocking at the time in the country music world. And then he ended up being like the biggest selling artist of the 70s. So like he came here and he found his fullest expression and he really sank into that and just owned it. And without all those expectations and pressure to be a certain way in Nashville, he just let loose, found his own authentic style, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the roots we're standing on.
For sure.
Yeah.
And there's been so many other singer-songwriters, you know, artists that have lived here. So
how has your life changed since you got here?
Goodness, in every way, honestly. You know what's funny? Like it's hard to even understand how this happened, but I started making memes like the day that I moved here.
Were you not making memes before?
Not really.
Really? Did you move here during the pandemic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 2020.
Okay.
2020.
Yeah, I think I really found you end of 2020 or 2021.
Yeah.
2021 is when I think you were going.
Yeah.
Your memes were everywhere.
Yeah, I was here. So I feel like I just found a new creative expression. I feel like I felt like I could be more of myself.
What were you doing before you got here for work and stuff? Your book?
Advertising. Mm. So I actually, no, so that New York ad agency that I worked for, I continued working there. I moved to LA and I still worked there. And I moved to Austin and I still work there remotely. And eventually what happened was the whole agency was acquired by this like big technology firm. And I was the head of the branding department. And they didn't want to do branding. They were a technology firm. So they just wanted our like tech capabilities and our UX capabilities. So the branding team was dissolved and I lost my job. And, you know, it was like, I didn't know what to do. And I didn't want another advertising job because at that point I had already put out 2 books and I already was growing my Instagram page. And I, after getting let go, instead of like looking for another job, I just started to meditate and be like, okay, really ask the universe, like what is trying to come through me? Like, how can I see this as an opportunity? I think every in my life, repeatedly, every time I've had a breakdown,
there's a breakthrough.
In hindsight, it was a breakthrough.
Yeah.
So now I recognize that pattern. So I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm having a breakdown. I lost my job. Like, I don't want to work in advertising anymore, but that's what I'm experienced in, but I don't want to do it. So where's the breakthrough? And I just would meditate and like, see what am I meant to be doing with this opportunity? And that's when the first seeds of The Art of You, my new book, started to come through, like literally in the days after getting let go. Like that new energy came through. And it started off, I was like just thinking about creativity. And I'm like, I've been an artist my whole life. You know, I've been a poet, I've been a painter, I've been a graphic designer, I've been a brand strategist, I've created viral memes. Like, I've done a lot in this world of creativity. And I was really thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, there's kind of like, I started to kind of crack the code of how creativity works. And I started to recognize what I now call the yin and the yang of creativity. Because I'm like, on one hand, creativity is very spiritual and mystical. Because like we were saying before, like intuition is like a portal that connects you with other dimensions, right? And like imagination. And I think so much of art and creativity is fueled by your emotions. So there's all these aspects that happen within us before the pen ever hits the page. And I call that creative yin, which is about creative being. But at the same time, creativity is about action. It's about doing things. It's about making things. It's about craftsmanship. It's about having a style and execution and discipline. And I'm like, okay, this is creative yang. This is creative doing, right? And this, these are universal energies, right? It's like the yin is the feminine principle of the universe and yang is the masculine principle of the universe. Although every man, woman, non-binary person, we're all a mix of them all. I have a lot of yin and I'm very comfortable in the yin, even though I'm a man. And so the yin and the yang of creativity, I started to really explore that idea and like identify the different stages of yin and the different stages of yang. And this was the seeds that eventually became The Art of You. And the first half of the book is all the chapters of yin. And the second half of the book is all the chapters of yang. So it's really about finding creative alignment. Because it's like in traditional Chinese medicine, if one part of the body is, you know, out of whack,
to bring it into balance,
everything suffers.
Yeah.
So it's similar to the creative process. Like, you need to have both the yin and the yang. It's like some people are very in their yin, which is beautiful. Like you might be really intuitive and you might be really emotional and you might be in flow and you might just like always be inspired. But if you don't have the yang, you're never going to finish projects.
Yes. And you know what I've been calling it lately is the guardrails, like being a feminine, because I've swung the pendulum. So I've gone through phases where I'm so in my masculine, creating business, you know, and then I will swing it the other way. And I'm like, I need to be my feminine. I don't want that. And then I'll be in my feminine. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not having the results that I want in my life. And something that came to me, it was in November, inspiration for how to really live my life forward is create the masculine guardrails of the executor, the provider, the one who's got it, so that the feminine can play.
100%.
Because if the feminine doesn't have the guardrails, then you don't feel, if you're not making money, doing the things that we need to do, you can't really play in the feminine. You're just the feminine with anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very similar to an example in the book where I talk about a river. And like you look at a river, because the yin and the yang are in, they're part of nature. They're all around us. It's like it's like a universal principle. So like you can even look at a river, like the water in the river is the feminine. It's like this, it's flowing, but the banks of the river are the masculine and it's holding it into place. And if you don't have the yang, the masculine, then it's not a river, it's a flood. It just spills out, it spills everywhere. And you know, if you just have the river banks but no water, there's no purpose. It's just there. So it's the perfect integration of the yin and the yang right there. Because on the flip side, yeah, you might be very much like when I was working in advertising, it's very yang centric. It's kind of like do, go, tight deadlines, like bunch of clients at once, you know? And I'm grateful for that experience because it taught me creative endurance. It taught me like, okay, sometimes the first idea is the best idea because you don't have time to sit around and brainstorm for a week. It's like, okay, we have the idea for the campaign and great, let's make it happen. So there's good, for me, it was like a boot camp. It was good training to go through, but I'm also grateful I'm not doing it anymore. Because if you're all productive and all masculine, but you don't have that yin, then you're going to be productive, but your work is not going to be meaningful, or it's not going to be coming from a place of purpose. So it's really about finding that balance. And some people need to tap into their yin more. Some people need to tap into their yang more. So the book is really a blueprint and a guidebook for the whole creative process, from the initial, not even the inception of the idea, but just like from the place of stillness and doing nothing and just reconnecting with yourself, all the way to, you know, setting an intention and cultivating your intuition and learning how to work with your emotions and how to overcome the inner critic. And then in the masculine, it's like how to develop your own style, how to experiment with your technique, how to show up consistently and have a disciplined practice. Even like there's a chapter called Going Pro, which is about how to grow an audience and to make money with your creativity. And then the last chapter is creativity and social impact. So how you can actually apply your creative thinking to making the world a better place. So it's really the full spectrum, and it's full of, it's full of illustrations and graphics and word art and poems and memes.
That you made?
That I made. So there's a lot of, you know, you can go deep and read the full chapters and go deep into any of the chapters that you're drawn to, but it's also kind of a coffee table book where you can flip through it and just find inspiration through all of the graphics and visuals that are in there as well.
Yeah. It's really, the world needs this book. Oh, it does.
Thank you. Yeah.
I have a lot of, I'm going to read it, but I have a lot of friends too, who I think, not struggle's not the right word, but the competence to create and to execute and to trust the creativity, because it is such a, I call it a mad artist. You know, every time I'm birthed, I'm in a launch right now and it's just like, what am I doing? Where am I going? You know, but it's like that mad artist, and it really takes that, the yin and the execution too is so big. And I see a lot of really talented, beautiful people in my life that need the execution.
Sure. I think it's, it's useful for everyone, because I think creativity is the future in a lot of ways.
Oh, it is.
You know, and there's so many more people that are working for themselves, and, you know, we're in a place now where we're kind of navigating the unknown.
Without a doubt. It's very fascinating.
We're in uncharted territory.
Yeah, all of us.
As a society. Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, politics, the economy.
How we do things.
AI.
Yeah. I was just going to say how we do things, AI, and how we operate, how we live, how we work, what we,
Right. Everything's changing. So for me, creativity, the book is not just about how to make art. Like, yes, you might want to be a painter or, you know, a poet. That's great. It's great for that. But it's also about how to show up in your life. Because I think that the opposite of creativity is reactivity. So we're either going to be reacting to what's happening around us and like following the rules and taking orders, but, you know, we don't really have a society or the leadership today that is leading us in the right direction. So that reactivity, we need to pivot into creativity. That's how we can navigate the unknown and navigate the uncertainty, by applying creative thinking. Because I think being an artist and being creative, it's really about like reclaiming sovereignty over our own consciousness, which is useful in everything. It's just about problem solving. You know, you could, what's more creative than being an entrepreneur? Entrepreneurialism is the most creative thing you can do, because
you wake up every day and you have to create your path forward.
They call it making money. You're making it. If you can create a revenue stream, that is magic. You're creating a stream of revenue. You know, like we separate that idea of like business and making money from art. But the same principles apply. You know, if you can think of how to be creative in one area, you can think of how to be creative in another. I learned this early on in my career, when I went from like graphic design to brand strategy, because that was a big jump. Like, I don't have experience doing this, but I'm like, okay, well, I figured out how to be creative in this area. So I'm going to, like, creativity is a transferable skill. So you can learn how to apply creativity to business or to relationships, or whatever it is. So I think that creativity it's needed now more than ever.
Without a doubt. And people want it now more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fun too. It's just like, it awakens something inside of ourselves that's like kind of trying to come out.
Yeah. It's the purpose thing too. Mm-hmm. I think also after COVID and just the shifts that we're now in, I think people are craving, including myself, a deep sense of purpose and belonging.
Yes, exactly. Because people used to get their purpose from their career.
And how we've done, it's not there anymore.
It's not there anymore. And even like with AI coming, a lot of careers that used to be there won't even be there.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, it's time to figure out how to be creative, how to navigate and really build a new world. Even how do we restructure society? Like, how do we have a fair and balanced society that's connected to, you know, the heart and to each other? You know, it's not self, it doesn't just happen. It requires us all to build it together. I think we're also, you know, one thing I learned in Kundalini, because I didn't know anything about astrology.
I'm such an astrology person.
Was the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm. That's where we are now, baby.
Well, that's where we are. And one of the things that they told us in Kundalini was one of the signifiers of the age of Aquarius is decentralization. So in the age of Pisces, which was the last age, that's why we had these religious idols and icons and gurus.
And now we are the guru.
We all are.
We all are. That's each individual is their own guru.
We're all,
that's the age of Aquarius.
We're all nodes in the network.
Yes.
That are all connected to each other. So we don't need
to look up
Jesus or Muhammad or whoever to be these intermediaries between us and God. You know, we have direct access to God. Mm-hmm. We all do. And then we are all nodes on this network. So it's really important. What are we bringing to the table? What are we feeding into the matrix? You know, and just showing up more consciously and intentionally with our own creative purpose. That's the way of the future.
Yeah, it is. So you got here, you wrote this book, channeled through you, and that was, you didn't go back to your...
No, I figured out how to make money through my creativity by teaching. So my first getting my feet wet into being a creativity teacher, I launched a class called Meme School. And I taught people how to make memes.
That's brilliant.
so many people need help with social media content and with just like, so many people have a purpose and have they feel called towards stepping into their purpose and into leadership in some sort, but they're not sure how to express themselves
online.
What is their voice online? Yeah. So what I find myself doing now is I spend all those years doing brand strategy for these big companies, and now it's like, oh, you know what? That same thought process applies to us as creators, as entrepreneurs, as coaches, all these different things that people are doing now. They need direction. They need to have clarity over their own message. So I figured out how to apply that all those years of experience I had in brand strategy to helping other people express their own purpose and to step into their own, you know, creative power.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're doing incredible things.
Oh, thank you.
Where can everyone find your book?
The Art of You is available wherever books are sold. If you go to my Instagram bio, at Words Are Vibrations, all the links to all the online stores are in there. And if you, there's a free, bonus bundle that you can get where I'm currently in the middle of interviewing some of my favorite artists and writers. And if you buy the book and sign up for the bundle, you can attend some of these online and join the conversation and meet some of these artists and writers. So make sure you sign up for the bundle as well.
Okay. Bundle it is.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
Of course, Kenzie. It's thanks for having me on. It's been great to get to know you since you've been in Austin and seeing you around town. So yes. I appreciate getting a chance to drop in with you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you gave it a rating and review. For my method, you can go to bodyforward.com. This is a Kundalini activated daily practice that will quite literally transform your life from the inside out. It awakens any energy that is available to us in our bodies that is waiting to be activated and to come alive, helps us remove density from the body, and most importantly, create our lives and our path forward. This method has truly transformed my life, and I'm so grateful that I get to share it with you every single week and be a part of your daily practice. I share new classes weekly, live stream classes. It's a powerful practice set to music. We do movement, we do breath, we do a lot of Kundalini activation, and I can't say enough good, amazing things about this practice. And it's not just me who feels this way. The reviews and testimonials from all of you just sharing how it's helped you move your life forward has been so phenomenal, and I'm just so endlessly grateful. So you can go to bodyforward.com, sign up for the membership. We offer a free 7-day trial, so you can come give it a try. I can't wait to see you there. For all things Kenzie Burke, you can go to @KenzieBurke on Instagram, and I will see you on the next episode.